some breaking news. We do not know exactly what is going on here in Upshur County. They are ringing the bells of the church. This is the first time that has occurred. We heard some shouting over at the church. You're a friend of Terry Helms. Terry, was. What have you heard?
They just come out of the mosque. We got 12 live. That's good news.
Who told you that?
They just came out of the mosque and sent an official down. Said we got 12 live.
A week ago, that was Anderson Cooper in West Virginia covering the West Virginia miners story, which at that moment looked like a miracle, but as we found out about 3 hours later, turned out not to be. Rather than 12 alive and one dead, it was 12 dead and one alive. Anderson Cooper joins me here on the Paul Harris Show this afternoon. Welcome back to KMOX.
Paul, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure having you on here. What went wrong in that story?
Well, you know, the only people really who had access to the information chose to withhold the information. I mean, the mine officials, you know, they were the only ones who could tell us what exactly happened in that mine, and all the sources that we had, everyone from the governor to a congressperson to the people from the mine company who were calling relatives, were all saying the same thing. They were all saying the miners were alive, and even though the mine officials knew about 45 minutes after it happened that, in fact, the information was incorrect or at least questionable, they chose to withhold that, and from the mining families, more importantly, which was just really stunning.
You were on the air for 7 or 8 hours straight that night, and who was that guy who walked up to you and gave you that initial news that all the miners were alive? Do we even know who he was?
He was a friend of Terry Helms. Terry Helms is one of the miners, and we had been, we'd spent the last 40-some-odd hours on and off, you know, talking with the Helms family and their family and friends. So he was just one of the people who we had met there who'd been holding vigil along with everyone else.
And then later on you heard it from a woman by the name of Lynette Roby. About 3 hours later she came out of the church and told you, and that video and audio of you getting the news from her on the air, I could feel for you as a broadcaster who's been in a live situation like that. Everything you know is now turned upside down, and it sounded to me like you were kind of doubtful of what she was saying at first.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the thing about live television. All of this is happening, you know, it's all happening as you are seeing it. And so, yeah, I was dubious of everyone who came on. You know, as soon as we had a Red Cross official who came on at 9 o'clock and broke the news that one of the miners was dead, and I was checking her tag to make sure, you know, is she a legitimate Red Cross official? I mean, at a certain point, you're there, and, you know, people are coming and saying stuff, and you know, it's a frightening thing, and you know, Lynette Roby had been on our air previously. She had, I knew she lived in the neighborhood. I knew she was a neighbor, but I was quizzing everyone, you know, especially, I mean, at a time like that, you know, where did they get the information? Who did they hear it from? Because everything was coming from the mining families.
Yeah, I don't know if it was her or somebody else, you said, whose lips did you hear that from?
Right.
Because you were trying to be as skeptical as you possibly could, and yet, as you pointed out, there was confirmation from a congresswoman who was there, the governor was giving the thumbs up.
Yep.
All the officials were misleading you with information when they knew it was exactly the opposite. How did they get held accountable? Because there was so much blame for the media. You were unfortunately at the center of it. How do we make sure that those people are held accountable for what they did?
Well, I mean, that's what, you know, we always try to do. You got to keep asking them the tough questions and follow through on it. I mean, there are going to be investigations. The state has announced one. The governor has said they want to have it. Congress has talked about having some hearings next week. But, you know, the mine officials are really the ones who were running the show there. The governor seemed to be taking orders from them in terms of what information was released. And they had previously done a really good job of informing the families in a timely manner when they had information. I think there's an awful lot we are going to be learning in the weeks ahead about exactly what went on in that mine, and I think a lot of it is really just going to be tragic information.
Anderson, you've been on my show on and off since the days of The Mole, even before the CNN thing, so you know I'm a fan of yours. Last summer, I thought you had, if you'll excuse the expression, your high water mark in your coverage of Katrina, particularly, was it Senator Mary Landrieu who you took on the air in one rather emotional moment?
She was a guest on the program.
Yeah. Did you get a lot of flack from people there in Washington?
You know, I really haven't heard anything about it now from people. I try to talk to people in Washington as little as possible. But
I mean, are they reticent to do your show now because you've obviously shown yourself to be a guy not afraid to ask the hard questions and stick your face right in theirs?
I have noticed a decline in our ability to get some people out of Washington. The governor of Louisiana won't talk to me anymore, nor will the mayor of New Orleans. But you know, we keep inviting them on the show just about every day, and I'd still love to have them on. There's a lot of questions I'd like to ask them. But you know, I try to be respectful of everyone. I don't wear my opinion on my sleeve. But I do think, especially in a situation like that, people, you know, the audience deserves answers to questions, and I'm not trying to ask. I'm not hostile. I try to be, you know, as fair and accurate as possible. But I think the one thing that bothers me, I think bothers me as a viewer as well as anything else, is just when you ask a question, you don't get an answer. You get a response, and as you well know, a response is not an answer. You know, you get these pat phrases, and it just drives me nuts.
Yep, that's why I don't allow politicians on this show. I say for so long, you can ask a politician a straight-up question like, how much is 2 + 2, and they'll tell you what's wrong with the education system. I want to hear 4, but you can't get that out of them. Last month, you went back to Baghdad, not the first time you've been there. Tell me what that was like.
You know, it's always an amazing thing to go back, and I try to go as much as possible, and also just try to get out of Baghdad as much as possible. It's really difficult now. I went up to Bakuba with the U.S. military, stayed up there with the 3rd Brigade, 3rd Infantry, and you know, went on a bunch of patrols, started going on patrols with Iraqi soldiers, which was the first time I'd been able to do that. You know, I see signs of progress. I think Iraq is like, kind of like a Rorschach test. People see what they want to see there. You know, there's some people who go and they want to see, you know, positive signs, and they see positive signs. People go and they want to see negative things, and that's easy enough to do as well. You know, what I always come away with it is just this incredible respect for the soldiers who are there and the job they are doing, the Marines and airmen. And I mean, it's just day in and day out to be doing what they're doing. With the little amount of credit that they get, and it is just, you know, it's an uphill battle. It is, you know, the key right now is to training these Iraqi forces, getting them online. But I mean, every time I go out on patrol with U.S. forces, I'm blown away by their dedication, and it's really inspirational.
Tell me a little bit about security. Jill Carroll, a 28-year-old freelance reporter for the Christian Science Monitor, was kidnapped over the weekend. A gunman ambushed her car, killed her translator in western Baghdad. How concerned were you about that, and how safe were you when you were there?
You know, security is the number one concern for everyone there, and you know, we travel with a private security force. We don't rely on the U.S. military. We rely on our own people. You know, the soldiers have enough on their hands, and they don't need to be taking around reporters. So, I mean, we basically every major media company contracts with private security people, and we have people who travel with us at all times. It's usually a number of people, guys with very thick necks, who have been in a lot of bad places, for a lot of mostly former Special Forces guys. And you know, they are our eyes and our ears. It allows us to ignore all that and just focus on the story and talking to people and trying to report the story. You know, my concern is, as a reporter, when you're afraid, it really changes the way you see things. And, you know, I've been doing this and going to wars for a long time, and started when I was, you know, in my early 20s going to combat zones. And, you know, when you're in the security bubble, you know, the armored the bulletproof glass, it distorts things. And so I think it's really important to not let fear determine how you see things, and to just, you know, put your safety in other people's hands, and you got to act normal and just go about your day. So, I mean, I think that woman, it is just horrific that she's been kidnapped. I don't think she had security guards with her. I think she had a driver and a translator. And as you said, the translator was shot on site.
You can't rely on the Iraqi police or the Iraqi army?
You don't know who's who. I mean, there was a bomb went off yesterday, and it was detonated by two people dressed as senior Iraqi police officers. So you're stopped at a roadblock by Iraqi forces, and I got to tell you, you don't open the door. I mean, that's rule number one. Even if it's an Iraqi police officer asking you to roll down your window, first of all, in an armored vehicle, you can't roll down your window, but you don't open that door for anybody. You show them your pass, and you just stay in the car.
What was your perception, Anderson, of the growth of the Iraqi army and the Iraqi police? I mean, America is counting on these guys to take over security for their own country so that we can get our boys and girls out of there.
Yeah, you know, it's a hard thing training a force, getting a force from scratch, which is essentially what they've been doing, especially with the police force training them. You know, I used to go out in Haiti when they were sending U.S. soldiers were retraining Haitian police, and they were sending New York City police officers down there through the U.N. And it takes years. And you know, you go down to Haiti now, and all those Haitian cops who were trained by New York City police officers are probably as corrupt as just about anybody else. So. It is a very difficult thing in Iraq. I think, clearly that is the that's the exit strategy. That is the plan. So I think the U.S., they have to make it work. There's not an alternative. I mean, it's got to work.
Anybody point a gun at you while you were there?
It took about 12 hours for my first gun to be pointed at me, but it wasn't pointed hostilely at me. It was just it was an Iraqi patrol. They wanted the traffic to stop, and they point the guns at you to make you stop in your car, and I can guarantee you we stopped.
People who are critics of the media say, you guys don't tell the real story over there. You don't tell the successes. You only talk about the bombings and the killings. How much truth is there to that?
I hear that a lot, and I understand that argument. I understand where they're coming from. I mean, you get that a lot from soldiers who'll say, well, look, what you're showing isn't what I see on a daily basis. And there's a couple things. That is probably true. I mean, first of all, most people who are there are in one spot, and what they see is the same thing day in and day out. They're delivering water. They're doing what they do on patrol. And so I think we do tell those stories. I think we tell a range of stories, but frankly, in a newscast where only a minute is devoted to Iraq, you got to weigh people who have died on that particular day versus several gallons of water that were delivered in a neighborhood. Both stories are important, but I think more time should be given to this story. It's a tough story to tell, and it's an important story.
But the same is also true even in local news. Four people die in a police chase. That's going to get a lot more coverage than, hey, they put a new roof on the school.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's human life, and so then, you could argue, well, human life is intrinsically worth reporting on when it is extinguished. I mean, I get the frustration, though. I mean, there is progress there. I think we show that progress, and I think we talk about it. But naturally, people who are enmeshed in the mission and carrying out the mission, they're gung ho about it, and they want to see, they want to see a positive story out there. And our job isn't to do a positive story or a negative story. It's just to talk about what we see. I do think it's important. I do think from their side of it, I get it. I think it is very easy when you're, being driven around in army vehicles and you can't talk to people for more than 10 minutes because you're afraid that you're going to get kidnapped if you stand in one spot too long. It does change the way you see things, and I think that's a problem. I think it is too easy to pay attention to just the bombing. I think you got to go out more, and you got to constantly look for those other stories.
When you are out doing live stories, and we're kind of turning full circle back to what we were talking, since you're the host of 360 every night on CNN, a full circle would work here. Coming back to the live coverage, networks like yours do a lot of live coverage. They send you out on the field, they give you the camera and the microphone, and they say, okay, here you are, report from there. Does the fact that you're on camera so much and for so long mean that you can't do enough reporting to get the real story to us, and you can only show us the part of the story that you're exposed to in that small area around you?
I think there's a danger in that, but the reality is that it's a team effort, and I'm the guy on camera, maybe, but we have, on that mine story, we had, I don't know the absolute number, I'm guessing at least probably 50 people in the field on that story. I had Joe Johns, a reporter and producer, down at the hospital. I had, people up waiting for the press conference from company officials. I had Randy Kay and several producers right outside the church with a camera crew. We're the only people who had that. So, I mean, you have people in all different, spots, and you try to get as many different people in as many different places as possible. So even if I'm not, I can't be in all those spots, but I have access to all those people instantly, and we can, that's how we cover a story. So it doesn't necessarily matter if I'm just in one spot on the air. I'm only as good as the team I have in place, and thankfully CNN has great teams.
When I mentioned on my website, harrisonline.com, that you were going to be on the show with me this afternoon, I got email from women all over the country, and I'm not making this up, Anderson. Linda in Colorado says she's a big Ander fan. I guess this comes with that whole People Magazine Sexiest Guy in America thing last year. She wants to know how you arrive at the stories you're going to do every night on Anderson Cooper 360.
You know, you go for a mix of stories. I mean, there's some days where it's obvious. I mean, you know, obviously we'll be covering some of the Alito hearings today, and it's always a mix of things. I mean, there's something like the mining thing happens, and that becomes really the only story we'll focus on in any given day. But every day you wake up, and that's what makes the job interesting. You never know what you're going to cover, and you kind of look at what's out there, and it's a mix of what you think is important, what you think people are interested in watching, and just some interesting stories that people may not know about.
One more question from Sharon in New Jersey, who wrote to Paul Harris at KMOX.com. Hi, I'm a fan of Anderson Cooper 360. Please ask him if he feels that going through all the tragic events of last year and now in West Virginia have changed the tone of his show and the stories he chooses to cover during the two-hour period of the show every night. Also, what happened to the Nth Degree? I want it back.
Yeah, the Nth Degree was the segment we did at the end of it, and I get that a lot. And, maybe we'll bring it back. We'll see what we can do. But, it has changed. There's no doubt about it. You can't go through something like Katrina where you see just the failure of officials at all levels, state, local, and federal. I was reminded, and I think we should all be reminded, of the role that reporters are supposed to play and should be playing. And, you know, I felt honored to be in a spot in Waveland, Mississippi, or in New Orleans where, I could point out things which were not being done. And people were coming to me all the time and saying, look, you know, there's a body over here. Why isn't somebody picking it up? And, you know, to be able to put those questions to people in power, I was honored to be able to do that. And it was a good reminder to me of what we're supposed to be doing. You know, it's not supposed to be just silly fluff stories just to get people to watch, which is frankly what you see a lot on cable news. You know, and there are a lot of stories out there which aren't stories, which people just talk about every night. When there really are important things happening, and I think it's our job to show that.
Well, you have been doing this for quite a while, but I think in the last 6 months you've really come into your own and discovered what it is you should be doing, and I congratulate you on that.
Well, thanks.
Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it, as always.
Anytime. It's good talking to you, Paul.
Anderson Cooper, his show Anderson Cooper 360 airs 9 to 11 Central Time on CNN every night. Anderson Cooper on the Paul Harris Show this afternoon on News Talk 1120 KMOX.